The question and answer program everyone enjoys.
I would say yes.
That's right.
That's right.
Here are the questions.
The history of cars. Our first caller is Sid from Faulkner. Hey, Sid.
Hey. Smoke 'em up, sister. That was a good tune.
You like it?
I do, of course.
Oh, I've got a couple of them. I've managed to pull a couple of them out of the system here. You put in like a word, and then it throws up a very eclectic mix of things. I thought I might play the cars. That might be a nice thing to play after midnight.
Racy, maybe.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
Okay, so we've been doing something. That was a great show last night. I liked the touch of Babs. That was really sweet.
Got to mix it up. Yeah. You ready? Question number one.
Yeah, go on.
Which American city became synonymous with car manufacturing and earned the nickname Motor City?
Detroit.
Correct. Ding. I wonder if there's a ding in here.
Well, there might be a dong in my place because I've had a few spills tonight. But anyway, I'm getting by.
I don't.
Is there?
Yeah, I heard that. I'm not quite sure. Hang on a second. I need to turn off my microphone and have a call. I'm not sure whether that was a good thing to say or a bad thing to say, but let's move on like a nice middle-aged lady would do. Are you ready?
Go on.
Okay, next. Question two. Who is generally credited with building the world's first practical automobile powered by an internal combustion engine in 1885?
Gottlieb.
Who?
Gottlieb.
No, but the good personality. Maria and Diana got Detroit. That's good. And Sean likes your name, Sid, but that's not the right answer. So I have to say goodbye.
Goodbye and all the best.
I shall leave you to your dong. Here we go. Hi, George. Hang on a tick. I have to cough. Which bit of your face do you like, George?
Sorry, can you repeat that?
Which bit of your face do you like? We were talking today about liking a piece of your face.
My face?
Yes.
Oh, not much of it at all. Thanks.
Not much of it at all?
Not really.
Come on, there must be a bit.
Yeah, how about my nose?
Your nose. Perfect.
Yeah.
Thanks, Locke. Locke's just brought me a glass. Oh, it's still working.
Yeah.
I used to complain
about my... eyes aren't working very well, so... The nose still works. But I have my sense of smell is not very good, so... But okay. My nose, that's the air in.
Okay. Do you know who is generally credited with building the world's first practical automobile powered by an internal combustion engine?
I think that might have been Mr. Benz.
It was Mr. Benz, and guess what?
A German chap.
You've got my first ding.
Oh.
I know. Isn't wonderful. That good? I'm just going to get this one here.
Wonderful. You're very organised tonight.
Well, not really. I just sort of do it on the fly because I can give you some more information about that. His three-wheeled Benz patent Motorwagen is regarded as the first practical modern car. It received his patent in January 1886. So there you go. Question three. Pope John Paul II. Oh, this is too easy. Lockie. Pope John Paul II narrowly survived an assassination attempt in 1981 before later travelling in a bulletproof car called what?
How about the Pope Mobile?
Yes, that is correct. And I'll just play this again. Hang on a minute. Get that happening. Oh, ding isn't there. Gosh. Anyway, ding. Oh, that's why. I've pressed the wrong button. Hang on a minute. There you go. Which future British Prime Minister famously remarked that a man who beyond the age of 26 finds himself on a bus can count himself a failure?
So what was it? It's a British Prime Minister who found himself on a bus.
No, it's actually an awkwardly phrased thing. It says, which future British Prime Minister said this? They said, a man who beyond the age of 26 finds himself on a bus can count himself as a failure. Who said that? It was someone who became the Prime Minister of Britain.
Man who became Prime Minister of Britain said...
No, he didn't become... The person who became the Prime Minister of Britain said this about the human race, that if a man finds himself on a bus, riding a bus at the age of 26, instead of owning a car, obviously, they can count themselves a failure. Which future Prime Minister said this?
Future? This is what I don't understand. Which?
Well, they weren't Prime Minister when they said it.
Yeah, which future Prime Minister said someone who finds himself on a bus is a failure? It doesn't make a lot of sense.
Okay, I'm going to try again. Let me try again.
Yeah. It sounds like the sort of thing someone like... someone who became Prime Minister, that's what I'm getting at. Yeah, okay. I'll say Margaret Thatcher because she's the most outspoken one of all these sorts of people.
After all that,
really.
You got it right.
Okay.
You're doing very well.
Wouldn't have been the sort of thing that Winston Churchill would have said. He said lots of things, but I like the one where he said, where the woman who got up, when he was doing a speech, said something along the lines of, "Mr. Churchill, I believe you're drunk."
And you, madam, are ugly, but I'll be sober in the morning. Yeah,
but I'll be sober in the morning. I thought that was very clever.
Yes.
I mean, whether he really said it or not, probably another matter.
Cruel, but fair. Anyway, that remark that Margaret Thatcher made became one of the defining quotations associated with Thatcherism, reflecting the era's emphasis on individual success and aspiration through private car ownership.
She was definitely in the right wing of politics, I would suggest.
Yes, she was. She was tough. In which city?
Iron Lady.
Tough. Yeah, they called her the Iron Lady, but she was just a tough person, yeah?
Yep.
In which city did Ford open Australia's first major car manufacturing factory in 1925?
I think, well, Ford were in Geelong, I suppose, so I'll just say Geelong.
Aren't you doing well?
Well, you're asking me a few questions that I know the answers to, which helps.
It does. That's why you get a ding. Ford's Geelong plant marked the beginning of Australia's large-scale car manufacturing industry and operated for more than 90 years before closing in 2016. And that was a big day.
Yeah, my brother worked for Ford, so he went to the odd trip over to Geelong.
Well, I can tell you that Diana from Woodenilling knew the answer to that. Paul from Plainlands did. Adrian, yeah, lots of you know it. Good, excellent.
They also still sponsor, I think, Geelong Football Club.
Yeah.
Pretty sure they've got a Geelong emblem
logo.
That was the word I was trying to think of, logo on their uniform, or their jackets or jumpers.
Okay. On the radio is George. George is in Fremantle in Western Australia. He's doing very well at the quiz. He's got 5 right so far. Which famous invention for cars, introduced in 1959, was deliberately left unpatented so that all manufacturers could use it?
I think there's a seatbelt.
Oh, gosh. Never knew that. They gave it to rival manufacturers for free because they believed in public safety and they thought that was more important than profit. It was. I'm going to ask you a extra question. Which car manufacturer came up with that seatbelt?
Probably Volvo, but I'm not sure. But I think that it was Australia was one of the first places to make them mandatory to actually wear seatbelts.
But it was Volvo. How did you know that?
How do I know it?
Yeah.
It's like probably most of my trivia knowledge is just through, hearing little bits and pieces.
Little bits of flotsam and jetsam along the way.
In my experience. Mm. I've been around for a few years, so that helps.
Who was assassinated while riding in an open-top car in Sarajevo in 1914, triggering the chain of events that led to the First World War?
That was Archduke Franz Ferdinand. He was assassinated by a guy called, Philippe or Philippe,
Why'd he do it?
Why did he do it? Because he didn't like him.
Ah.
There was a documentary on it. Apparently it was a real they were warned that, he might get assassinated, and he sort of defied the advice and sort of, you know, took a car trip to some place, and although they were warned that there was someone out to get them. I think it was he and his. I think he might have even been his wife was shot as well.
Mm. I bet you anyway. they didn't say "told you" afterwards.
Told you so. Yeah. Well, a bit late, wasn't it?
A bit late. Are you ready for the next question?
Probably not, but let's have it.
Question 8: Which car company uses the spirit of ecstasy as its bonnet ornament?
It'd be Rolls Royce.
Boy. I reckon we must have got this quiz out of a Kellogg's packet and you bought the same cereal. So the mascot has appeared on almost every Rolls-Royce since 1911.
Yep.
Which future, question 9, for those of you pedants that want to know, the answer to the one before was Rolls-Royce. Question 9 now, which future Nobel Peace Prize winner was arrested while driving a car disguised as a chauffeur in 1962.
I've got to get this. Which future Nobel Peace Nobel Prize winner was it? Arrested.
He was disguised as a chauffeur. It was 1962, but they came and they got him. After all of that, he went on to win a Nobel Prize.
Oh, after he was just a chauffeur.
Look, it's one of those future questions that possibly isn't expressed as clearly as it should be. There was a man who was driving a car disguised as a chauffeur in 1962, and he was arrested doing that. He went on to win a Nobel Prize, a Peace Prize. Who is that person?
62. Oh, look, I don't know. I'll say Nelson Mandela.
Oh, you looked it up.
What?
Did you look that up?
Hang on. No, I mean, I was thinking Gandhi for a minute, but I don't know whether he ever won a Peace Prize, and he was dead by then anyway. So.
Gosh, you know lots. So I'll just tell you the backstory. At the time, Nelson Mandela was South Africa's most wanted political fugitive. He was driving a car in disguise as a chauffeur. Under apartheid, a black man driving a white passenger in a chauffeur's uniform attracted far less attention from police than a well-dressed black man travelling independently. But that's why he was disguised. And following this arrest, he was imprisoned for 27 years.
In Robben Island off just off Cape Town.
Which, question 10, so the answer to the one was Nelson Mandela. Question 10, which notorious American outlaws were ambushed and killed in a stolen...
Oh, that's an easy one, Bonnie and Clyde. was in the movie, wasn't it? They shot him up.
Yeah, they shot him up. Which car company launched the world's first mass-produced hybrid car in 1997?
Hybrid car, 97. That was, I think that was Honda or Toyota. Hang on.
Give me your answer.
No, hang on.
No, not while you look it up.
Oh, no.
You're looking it up. I'm
holding a phone in my hand.
Look it up.
How do I look it up? I've got a phone in my hand.
Give me your answer or else I'm moving on. Everybody's...
Okay, look, I'll say it's...
Moved on. Who am I talking to now? Lincoln, hi.
Hey, Lib.
How are you? Good, thank you. How are you?
Pretty good, how are you?
Very good, thank you. I get lots of people saying they're looking it up, but, you know, you're not allowed to look it up.
Yeah. Okay, I won't swear it.
Okay, maybe. Which car company launched the world's first mass-produced hybrid car in 1997?
That was when the petrol and electric cars were coming, or the electric cars were coming in, and Prius was a mix of electric and petrol.
Yeah, but which car company did it?
Oh, Prius.
No, well, Toyota. Oh, damn. I just gave
No!
Oh, God. Sorry, you got to go. Oh. Sorry. Sorry, got wrong answer. Steve. Sorry, the quiz has got a bit chaotic, Steve. I do apologise.
That's fine, Libby.
You're right. Yeah. So we worked out that that was Toyota. That was the car company launched the world's first mass-produced hybrid car in 1987. It was Toyota. It was the Prius, and it helped. That was the model, and it helped popularise hybrid technology worldwide. Okay, which US politician's 1969 car accident on Chappaquiddick Island effectively ended his chances of becoming president? You know this.
That would have been the Kennedy,
That's
Edward
it.
Kennedy,
which one?
Edward, wasn't it?
It was. Edward Ted Kennedy. Correct, correct. I will give you the ding because it's fun. There you go. His car drove off a bridge, killing campaign worker Mary Jo Kopechne. Never lived through that, really.
No.
Yep. Which city introduced the world's first congestion charge for cars in 1975?
75. Was it London?
No, it was not London.
No!
Sorry!
Thanks, Libby. Yeah.
Okay, let me just go here. Greg's in Perth. Hi, Greg.
Hi there, Libby.
Yep. Which city introduced the world's first congestion charge for cars in 1975?
I have no idea, but I would just go Paris.
No, it wasn't Paris. I'm sorry.
Fine, thank you.
That's all right. Thank you for playing.
Bye.
Hey, Les.
Good evening.
How are you?
Oh, getting older and sillier.
Yeah. That's the name of the game. Well, at least you're on the right side of the ground.
Exactly. Just.
Which city introduced the world's first congestion charge for cars in 1975?
Oh, I say Beijing.
No, I'm sorry. That is incorrect. It is not Beijing.
No!
It's funny, isn't it? That no is actually part of the sting. Hello, Anne.
Hi, how are you going?
Good. It's been forever since we've spoken.
Thank you. Yeah.
Do you know which city introduced the world's first congestion charge for cars in 1975?
I don't know. I know London has it now, but that's already been suggested. Mm. I will try Singapore, but not with a lot of confidence.
Well, you should be confident because that is correct. Singapore. Remember, they wouldn't let you spit or anything. It was a. It's Singapore has got a. Has always had a history of good, sort of social hygiene.
Oh well, I think since I don't know if it was Lee Kuan Yew, but since then it's been really clean and everything, and you're not allowed to even take what's it called chewing gum in the suitcase with you to Singapore because it's a crime to have chewing gum.
Mm, it was Lee Kuan Yew, I think.
Yeah.
Some people think that it was London that was the world's first congestion charge, introduced the world's first congestion charge for cars, but it was Singapore. They launched the Area Licensing Scheme on the 2nd of June 1975, and that required motorists to buy a license to drive into the central business district during peak hours. It proved highly effective at reducing traffic and became the model for later schemes around the world. So there you go. If you wanted to go into the middle during peak hours, you needed a special license. Isn't that interesting?
Well, a friend of ours lives in London and he's not too happy with the congestion tax there.
Yeah. No.
That's a completely side issue. Hello?
Yes, no, I'm here. I was just reading a text message that kind of distracted me. I'm sorry. Are you ready for the next?
Yes, please.
Who won the Formula One World Championship in 1966? The only driver ever to win the World Championship in a car bearing his own surname?
Okay, I'm thinking aloud.
Hmm.
I'm wondering if it's Alan Moss, but that's not really a thing with his surname.
It was a Formula One World Championship. It was not Bathurst.
That doesn't help me much.
Doesn't it? I'm going to have to say bye-bye, Anne.
Although, ironically, I'm just sort of thinking, I'm looking forward to the World Cup tonight.
I am too. We're just whiling away the time, aren't we?
Completely, but I think I'm going to be fast asleep well before that.
No, you'll be fine. You stay up with me and we'll get there together. I'm going to do a little preview at the top of the hour. You'll love it.
Although those who know me know I'm really not into sport. But,
no, but it's not anyway. About sport, is it? It's about culture.
Yeah, sure.
All right. Oh, yes. Diana from Woodnelling knows who this answer is. Nicole, hi.
Oh, hello.
Hello. Do you know the answer to this question? Who won the Formula One World Championship in 1966? The only driver... The only driver ever to win the World Championship in a car bearing his own surname.
I'm going to hazard a guess. I don't know the full name. Ferrari?
No, but no, that's such a great name. Wouldn't you love your name to be Ferrari?
Yeah, well, I wasn't too sure if the certain Ferrari may have been a driver.
Yeah.
The only other one I can think of, and I'm thinking Bathurst, so no, that's not it either.
No, that's not it. Okay.
Okay, thank you so much, Libby.
My pleasure. Thanks
lovely.
For playing.
I loved this weekend. Awesome.
Oh, I'm glad.
Yeah, cheers. Thanks. I'm writing you a note as I speak.
Oh, excellent. Can't wait. See
okay,
ya.
Cheers.
Bye.
Bye.
Cameron?
Yes, how are you?
You are on the spot now.
No, well, I'm not because I know the answer.
Yeah?
And he was an Australian and he brought his car over to race here in Western Australia.
Yeah.
And he did a lap to warm the car up and it blew up and we never saw him racing it.
Oh.
But his name was Brabham and he actually built his own car.
Yeah, Australia's own Jack Brabham.
Yep.
1966, the car was called the Brabham Repco BT19, the BT19. Wouldn't that be annoying to take it all the way over to Western Australia and to do a lap and blow it up?
Well, it was disappointing for all us that paid good money to go and see it.
Yeah.
It was on the old Caversham airstrip. They converted the RAAF airstrip at Caversham, and they turned it into a racetrack and then held the Australian Championships there. And he was the guest to come over, and we half of Perth flocked there to see him. Did one lap, never completed it, and we never saw it. Yeah, big disappointment.
Yeah, I can imagine. Irene is with you. She says, the wonderful Jack Brabham car was designed, built and driven by him. So lots of people knew. Joy of Logan, Nightjoy, Jack Brabham. Yep, Sparkles, Jack Brabham. I don't understand that one, Lorella. Monoculture discussion, I don't understand that. Do you mean monodioxide? Because we're talking about cars. Anyway. All right, are we ready for the next bit? Which European president, Cameron, survived an assassination attempt in 1962 after his Citroen DS sped away despite having two tyres shot out?
Well, I don't know his name, but if he was in a Citroen, he was obviously French.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say De Gaulle.
Correct. It was De Gaulle. Charles De Gaulle, I love the way that you worked that out. Excellent.
His nickname, he was a great big tall bloke, and his nickname in the military academy when he was training to be a soldier was the Asparagus.
Oh, right. Yeah. Did he have anything about him that was green?
Oh, they were in green uniforms in the army.
There you go.
He was tall, and his fellow trainee soldiers nicknamed him for us L'Asparagus.
L'Asparagus. That's funny.
Yeah.
So a little bit of information about the car, the Citroen DS. It had an advanced suspension, and that helped keep the car under control, even though it had two tyres shot out.
Yeah, well, you could drive around with one tyre completely off, and it used to balance itself. And you could drive it around with three wheels instead of four. Yeah.
Yeah.
Very unique car.
Unique car. Question 16. In 1938, Nazi Germany unveiled the first Volkswagen. What does the word Volkswagen literally mean?
People's car.
Correct. That is correct. I never knew that. That's an interesting... I'm not so much... I can work out Volkswagen meaning the people's car, but I didn't realise that it was in 1938 and that it was a product of the Nazi regime. Didn't know it.
Yep.
In 1925, Perth missionary Neville Westwood became the first to do what in his car?
Around Australia.
Yes, he was the first driver to circumnavigate the Australian continent by motor car. So do you know what he was driving, just out of interest? It's just part of the, it's just backstory. It's not part of the question. You already got that one right.
Yeah, it was something like a Hudson. I think a Hudson.
It was a Citroen, 1923 Citroen.
Oh, a Citroen, yeah. Was it? All right.
A 5CV tourer on the 14,000-kilometre journey from Perth across the Northern Territory to Brisbane, then Sydney and back across the Nullarbor to Western Australia, and it took 5 months. It was reenacted last year.
All right, yeah.
Which rock star, question 18, which rock star shocked traditionalists when he famously had his Rolls-Royce Phantom V, do you call it Phantom V or Phantom 5, painted in psychedelic flower power colours in 1967?
Lennon.
Who?
John Lennon.
Correct, was. John Lennon originally had the car painted black, but later he commissioned a vivid yellow floral design that shocked many traditionalists. The brightly painted flower power Rolls-Royce became one of the defining symbols of the 1960s counterculture. Do you remember seeing that, Cameron?
Well, I never saw it, but I saw photos of it.
Yeah, that's what I mean. So you
yeah, yeah.
Was it amazing? What did you think at the time?
Oh, well, it wrecked buddy, very handsome Rolls-Royce, but, you know, it served the purpose. He was a power person, love, and all the rest of it. You know. Yeah, he was a bit of an oddbot, so he made his Rolls-Royce an oddbot. Yeah.
Never heard John Lennon called an oddbot before. But that's cute. Okay, you ready?
Yep.
Yeah, everybody knows John Lennon, Harry in the Bay, Jim from Campbelltown. Oh, that's interesting. Paul from Plainlands reckons that Citroën was designed to drive the country roads and not spill your wine. There you go. That's a funny one. Question 19. Which Australian highway was completed in 1976, finally linking every mainland state capital by sealed road?
Well, it starts off as the Great Eastern Highway until it reaches the South Australian border, and then it was all the way across the Nullarbor.
What's it called?
Route 1.
Correct. Do you know its total length?
No, I know, but to call it Road 1, Australian Road 1, is a bit silly because it doesn't follow the main roads. They went everywhere they could possibly go to make it the longest. Like it went down through Bunbury and Bustleton and Albany, Esperance, and then up to Kalgoorlie instead of going, you would expect Highway 1 to go Perth-Kalgoorlie as part of the Highway 1 because that was the major road, but no, well, something like 5,000 kilometres.
14,500 kilometres.
Oh, 14,500.
Yeah, it's the longest national highway in the world, surpassing the Trans-Siberian Highway and the Trans-Canada Highway. It's not the longest continuous stretch of highway, as both the northern section of the Pan-American Highway and the continental section of the AH1 still outmeasure it. What does that mean? It's not the longest continuous stretch, but it's the longest highway. So does that mean it stops?
no, we can't stop. It goes right around Australia. It's something broken.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Look where we're up to. We've powered through this one. It's the last question. Which country, Cameron, currently has the highest proportion of new car sales that are electric, with around 95% of new cars sold being battery electric?
China.
No, oh, it's not. It's not. Oh, I'm so sorry.
The last hurdle.
Yes. Oh, sorry. I'm really
very
sorry.
Good.
All right, let me go. Vicky, you're up.
Oh, no way.
Yes, you are. Do you want the drum roll to yourself? Here you go.
Oh, wow. Oh,
I know, too much pressure. I know. Do you know which country currently has the highest proportion of new car sales that are electric, with around 95% of new cars sold being battery electric?
Would it happen to be Japan?
No.
No. Oh,
sorry.
No. That's okay.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Ready? I'm going to you, Errol, because I've never heard of Titty Witty Beach in South Australia. Is it a real place, or have you just made that up to make Lachlan laugh?
It's a real place, real place.
Yeah.
People on the quiz have laughed about it for a few years now.
I can imagine.
Laugh about Titty Witty.
Yeah, Titty Witty. Okay, do you know the answer to this question? Would you like a drum roll?
No. I think it's Norway.
You are right.
Oh, yeah, before people...
Oh, there's your row. Are you ready?
What do I have to do?
Nothing. Just enjoy the Erling Haaland row. This is the Viking row from the World Cup. Congratulations to you. I'm going to give you a round of applause. It is Norway. Norway has the highest proportion of new car sales that are electric. Over 95% of all new passenger cars registered in the country are electric vehicles, with some months seeing this figure climb to almost 98%. Congratulations to you.
Thank you.
And I'll put you down here on hold so that Lachlan can organise you to get your magnet, because in the six programs I have presented here on Weekend Nightlife, I've realised that the magnet is the highlight of many of your existence. It goes on the fridge and you're part of a community, and I understand it makes you all feel special.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.